Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Got a couple of good things on tap for you today. First up, I've got a gear review, and in this gear review, I cover what you need to know about flat pedals and shoes when you are either making the switch from clipless pedals over to flats, or if you're just getting started and you've decided that you want to just stick with flats and not make that change to the clipless pedals. And so, you know, what do you need to know when looking for flats? What do you need to know when looking for shoes? And also give you a little advice on what to do with that learning curve that you're going to go through with, you know, keeping your feet on the pedals and stuff like that, and trying to keep your shins intact and pretty in the process. You know, after that, I've got a training tip. I call it my brake caliper analogy, and you know, hopefully the analogy, the story works for you guys. I like to tell stories and use analogies to try to explain complex concepts. Just, you know, find that it helps people remember them better. And so over the last few weeks, I've been messing around with a rubbing brake rotor, and finally realized, you know, that I didn't need to keep pushing my pads back. I didn't need to recenter my rotor. I had a stuck brake caliper. And, you know, how does that relate to knee pain or back pain or neck pain? I bet you didn't think that brake calipers and knee pain had anything in common, but you would be wrong. So I explained to you how those things relate, and give you some really good advice on what you need to think about when rehabbing an injury, or even looking for a medical professional to help you rehab an injury. So, and then finally, in my supplement and nutrition tip this podcast, I go over calories and why ultimately calories don't count, and you know, just kind of what the mentality that got us to that point is, and why it doesn't work. Like, calories don't count. How many calories you're eating is such a small part of the overall picture, and one of the reasons that there's so much frustration and confusion when it comes to nutrition and, you know, how to lose weight or increase muscle and increase performance and things like that. So anyways, yeah, so got some good info for you guys there. So without any further ado, we'll get to it. Hey guys, James Wilson back with this month's gear review, and actually a little bit more than a gear review this month. I kind of wanted to talk about what you need to keep in mind when you are buying flat pedals and shoes and getting started with flat pedals and possibly making the switch. I've been getting a lot of questions lately from people who have decided to make the switch, who've, you know, read my articles and listened to my podcast and realized that, you know, there is a lot more to this argument than what the clipless pedal mafia will let you know that there is. And so, but because there isn't a whole lot of info out there on what exactly do you need to know when you are getting going with flat pedals, there's some confusion and stuff like that. So I kind of wanted to go over some things that you want to keep in mind when you're looking for pedals, when you're looking for shoes, and also when you start riding with flat pedals, and what to do about the fact that there is going to be a learning curve as far as like learning how to keep your feet planted on the pedals and not have them, you know, bounce off from time to time. So first up, the flats. And, you know, this is the one thing that really drives me nuts is when people tell me, well, I tried flat pedals and they don't really work. And then I ask them, well, what'd you use? And come to find out, they use, like, you know, some cheap flat pedals that, like, you know, came on a Walmart bike, and their old tennis shoes, and then they wondered why they felt like they were going to die the entire ride. And you know, then you turn around and you look, and they've got like $250+ invested in their clipless pedals and shoes. And it's like, that's not a really fair comparison to compare, like, you know, $5 worth of equipment to, you know, $250 worth of equipment. Of course, it's not going to perform as well. So, you know, when you're looking at flat pedals, you can't go cheap. And, you know, when I used to work in a bike shop, we used to tell people, you know, you don't want cheap, you want budget oriented. If you want cheap, go to Walmart. That's what Walmart's for. So you want budget oriented, which means that, yeah, you don't necessarily need to spend $100 to $200 on a pair of flats, but you're going to need to spend more than $20-$25. So, you know, you can get a decent pair of flats in like the $50, $60 range. And I'll give you some, you know, some specific brands and stuff that I've used and had luck with. But the first thing you want to keep in mind, you want to look for a wide platform on the pedals. And, you know, this is pretty obvious. You want to make sure that you've got enough platform on the pedals to comfortably get your foot on it and be able to hold your foot. And I think most pedals do a pretty good job of that. However, there is something to keep in mind. Something I've noticed is that a lot of pedals tend to leave the outside edge, the very outside edge of your foot, hanging off the end of the pedal. And for me, I've really had a problem with that. I've had to look around and find pedals that extended all the way out so that my entire foot was covered. And the reason for that is when you stand up and pedal, the way that your foot moves and articulates is it actually, you know, you start by putting the pressure on the outside edge of your foot, and then your foot naturally rolls in to the midfoot, and then, you know, you continue on with your stroke. But that initial push through that outside edge, and if you watch when you run or something like that, especially if you're into the barefoot running thing, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, how your foot actually strikes towards that outside edge, you know, of your forefoot. And so if that outside edge of your forefoot is hanging in space because of the pedal's not wide enough, then you're not going to have any platform out there to push on. And I can tell you from experience, eventually it just feels weird. It's not normal. And so in looking around, I found some pedals, like the Acros, I think is the, how you say it, Acros, pedals. I got a good pair of flat pedals out that I'm using right now. Straight Line makes a good pedal that also extends out. So just something to keep in mind when you're looking for pedals is, you know, try them out, look at them, and you know, see if it's going to extend all the way. And, you know, for gravity riding, it's not as important. You know, on my downhill bike, I have just kind of what I consider to be a normal pair of flat pedals that leaves a little bit of that edge hanging off, because, you know, I don't pedal nearly as much downhilling and stuff like that as I do cross-country riding. But just something to keep in mind when you're looking for your pedal bike is get, you know, a little bit wider platform so you can make sure that you've got that entire foot covered. So just something to keep in mind there. You also want to look for good pin placement. And again, I think this is something that most pedals have pretty well. I mean, you'd have to look pretty hard to find pedals that don't have decent pin placement. But, you know, you're looking for, like, you know, at least 3 to 4 pins on the front and back edge of your pedals, you know, maybe a couple in the middle. I mean, we don't need, you know, 1,000 pins on it, you know, but you do need more than just a few. So you're looking for, like I said, especially on the edges, the front and back edge of your pedal, looking for, you know, at least four pins there, and then, you know, some in the middle. So, you know, replaceable pins is something to keep in mind, because you are going to bash them on rocks and stuff like that. So, you know, if it is a brand that lets you easily unthread the pins and replace them, then that can come in pretty handy. And so, you know, again, just something else to keep in mind. The spindle is another thing that you want to keep in mind. Especially, you got to keep in mind what it is that you're doing on these pedals, because the spindles will bend. And again, trust me, I've been, you know, riding flat pedals exclusively for over 10 years, and I've pretty much bent every spindle on every pair of pedals that I've ever owned. And so, you know, you want to make sure that you're not buying lightweight pedals with, you know, real lightweight spindles for downhilling or free riding or something like that, you know. And by the opposite, you don't need steel spindles for cross-country riding and trail riding. But again, just keep in mind what it is that you're doing. You know, again, another saying I picked up in working in bike shops, you know, light, cheap, or strong, pick two. So, you know, if you're looking for cheap and light, then it's not going to be very strong. And you need to keep that in mind when you're thinking about what application you're going to be using these pedals for. So, you know, don't get the super lightweight spindles. I don't think they're going to last very long. And also something to keep in mind is, are they serviceable? And some pedals are more serviceable than others. Some are basically meant, as soon as the bearings go and things start to fall apart, they're basically disposable. You know, your higher end pedals will tend to be serviceable, where you can replace the bearings and they'll have spindle replacements and stuff like that. So you can, you know, make them last longer. So again, you just got to keep in mind, you know, the more money you invest in a pair of flats, the longer they're going to last you. So you can either buy, an inexpensive pair of flats every year or two, or you can invest in a really good pair of flats that's going to last you for several years. And so, you know, the costs tend to more than offset themselves when you invest in something a little higher quality that's going to last you longer. So, again, just some things to keep in flats, keep in mind with the flat pedals. And so some brands and things that I've personally used and had luck with, the Azonic A-Frames are probably one of the best budget oriented pair of pedals out there. You know, probably I think they were the first pair of flats I've used, and you know, rode them for years and years and years, and still like them. I still have some a couple pairs floating around in my shed that'll get pulled out every once in a while. So that's a really good, if you're looking to get into flats and you're looking for an option, something that you can try without investing a ton of money, then they're real good. So the Azonic A-Frames are good. I also like the new Kona. I think it's their jack shit pedals, if that's what they're still calling them. But, you know, a good thin profile pedal. And I guess that's something I didn't really mention too. You know, a thinner profile pedal just has a better feel, I guess, is really the word. You know, you get these really thick, you know, like almost like an inch or more thick pedals, and it's just kind of like a dead feeling at the pedals. And so, you know, the thinner profile pedals are starting to get more popular, and so the Kona jack shit pedals are a really good pedal. You know, they're a thinner profile and they've worked real well for me. I've ridden those for a while. And then, like I mentioned earlier, you know, Straight Line makes a really good one, and the Acros, or Acros, however you say it, is another good one. You know, there's a ton of great pedals out there. Again, I can't say that anyone has cornered the market on, you know, pedals. And so it's not like with the clipless pedals where you've got to worry about what interface, you know, SPD or, you know, Time or, you know, the Crank Brothers, and you got all these different cleats, and the cleats got their pluses and minuses and stuff like that. I mean, you know, it's not quite that complicated. And so, you know, again, just keeping some of these basic things in mind, and you'll be able to find yourself a good pair of flat pedals. So moving on to the next part of the equation is shoes. And this is one I really can't emphasize enough. The 510s and the sticky rubber that they have on their shoes. And for those that don't know, 510 is a climbing shoe company. They make shoes for rock climbers. And the sticky rubber that they have to use on those rock climbing shoes is one of those types of rubbers what they use on their mountain biking shoes. And they are ridiculously sticky. I mean, they are unlike anything that you've ever tried before. They are a game changer. I have to say, if it wasn't for 510 shoes, I probably would not be up on my soapbox preaching flat pedals quite as loudly as I am. Because I remember before the 510s came out, and I still remember they came out and they were first branded as an intense shoe. And they were, you know, orange and blue and gold or something like that, really gaudy colors. But at the time, I was having to go to Payless every few weeks and buy a new pair of like cheap skate shoes and, you know, wear them until I wore them out, which, like I said, only took a few weeks or a couple months or something, and then go get some more. I remember I like going to Payless because you got to buy one, get one, so I could like stock up on shoes. And, you know, when they were dry and they were relatively new, then the skate shoes worked pretty darn good. But, you know, as soon as they started to get wore down a little bit, or, you know, worse yet, they got wet at all, then it was, you know, pretty sketchy riding those things. And so, you know, again, it was just kind of a trade-off. You know, what would you rather have? Your feet be stuck to your pedals and not be able to get away from your bike, or, you know, would you rather have your feet be a little sketchy? And so, you know, I chose the sketchy. But that's what led me to try the original 510 mountain biking shoes. And like I said, it was a game changer. And, you know, until you try it, you cannot pass any sort of judgment on modern day flat pedals and shoes. So again, you know, if you're one of these old school guys who's like, man, I tried flats back in the day, and you haven't tried them on 510s and a decent pair of flats, then again, I just hate to say it, but you can't pass judgment until you try it, because it's a completely game changing thing. So they're so sticky that you literally have to pick your foot up and move it. You cannot twist it on the pedals. and so they really help keep your feet planted. The impacts, they make several different types of shoes, from heavier duty riding shoe like the Impact to kind of lighter duty shoe like the Free Riders. But the Impacts have a pretty stiff sole, and I guess I'd say semi-stiff. It's not something that's going to interfere with how you walk around. I mean, they feel normal, but you can just tell when you're riding them. There's definitely a little bit more stiffness to those than there is to like a normal pair of shoes, or even like their Free Riders or one of their lighter weight pairs of shoes. So I like to use the Impacts for my trail riding and stuff like that, because they have that semi-stiff sole, and so give me a little platform there when I'm pedaling. And again, I guess that's pretty much it. I mean, I wish I could say that there was, I haven't tried others. I know like Nike's, trying to, get into the mountain biking market. I haven't really tried their shoes and seen what their soles are like. And like I said, I have ridden in Vans and Etnies and other skate shoes and stuff like that. So I can tell you from experience that skate shoes, no matter how good you think they are can't hold a candle to the 510. So again, if you are making the switch from flats to, or from clipless pedals to flats, or you're just getting started and you're starting to think like, hey, maybe I just want to stick with flats, then what you want to do is upgrade to the 510 shoes. There's just no way around that. You need to get a pair of 510 shoes to make this whole flats thing work. And so, in my opinion, you'd be better off in investing in a little bit cheaper pair of flats and getting you a good pair of 510s than getting a great pair of flats and then getting like a decent pair of skate shoes or something like that. So, and the shoes aren't that expensive. I mean, a pair of Impacts are going to cost you around $100, and they're going to last you for at least a whole season, if not longer, just depending upon how long you ride or how much you ride. So the shoes are a big part. You cannot just get a pair of flats and then start riding around in your tennis shoes and pass any sort of judgment on this. So, and then lastly, is what I call the cross country shinnies, or my XC shinnies. And this is something that I just instinctively started doing when I first started riding, was wearing a lightweight pair of shin pads. And they're starting to come out. Like, I think that 661 with their, oh, I forget what it's called, that cool little Impact stuff that they use in their pads, that used to be used in ski racing suits, that is real pliable and movable, but then upon impact stiffens up. I forget the name of the stuff off the top of my head, but they're able to fashion like lightweight, pliable padding, and they actually have like a line of cross country pads and stuff out now, elbow and shin pads and stuff like that. So the shinnies and stuff are something that you're going to need to use, because there is going to be a learning curve. Just like anything else, when you first started to ride clipless pedals, there was a learning curve, and you had to, make provisions for that and just kind of deal with the fact that sometimes you couldn't get out of your pedals and you were going to fall over. And so it's the same thing. There's a learning curve with everything that you do. And so when you switch to flats, at first you're going to have trouble figuring out how to keep your feet on the pedals, because you've relied for so long on the clipless interface keeping your feet on the pedals. And so there's two things that, or one big thing you can do to help change that. Well, two, one is the shoes. The 510s will really help with that. But two, standing up more will really, really help. And this is something that I don't think a lot of riders realize, but when you're sitting down and you're pedaling, or you're sitting down and going through a rough section and you've got no weight on your pedals, your feet are gonna fly off. I mean, that's just gonna happen. So, you have to learn how to keep your feet grounded, keep weight on your pedals, and standing up really helps with that. So anytime you're going through a rough section, you should be standing up anyways. But, and I'm also a big believer in standing and pedaling as much as you can, and only sitting when you need to. So, standing up is one of those things that really separates, I think, great riders from just average riders, and your ability to stand in different situations. And that'll help with your feet not flying off the pedals. But in the meantime, investing in a inexpensive, lightweight pair of shin pads just to give you some protection while you're getting through that learning curve. I mean, I wore mine for years. I used to wear them, you know, going to the, you know, ride my bike to the gym I used to work at in San Diego, and I'd show up and people, hey, what are you wearing shin pads for? Just for riding down the street? And I'm like, well, you must not see how I ride down the street, you know? I mean, I'm jumping curbs and riding down staircases and doing all sorts of stuff, and never fails that the one time that I'd forget to put my shinnies on, I'd slip a pedal and blast my shins open and show up to train clients with bloody shins. It was great. But anyways, the point is you just got to understand there's a learning curve. So, you know, get you a pair of lightweight shinnies and, you know, who the hell cares? You're going to get some stairs. I still remember I used to live when I lived in Hawaii on Kauai, every 4th of July, they've got a little kind of, you know, 4th of July power line trail race. And it's this 12-mile hump is really the best way to describe it, over the heart of the island for the most part. And, you know, I remember showing up one year and people looking at me like, dude, who is this guy? And, you know, I've got my flats and I've got my yellow shin pads on and I've got my, you know, long travel bike and with these really skinny tires because it was really muddy, and people were looking at me like I'm freaking out of my mind. But, you know, as I'm blasting by him on the trail, I ended up getting like, you know, sixth or seventh in that race out of like, you know, 30 some odd people, and a lot of people who take it way more seriously than I was. Definitely gained a lot more respect for the yellow shin pads. But it's funny, you still go to Kauai and ask those dudes on the North Shore about the dude who showed up in his yellow shin pads for the power line race and frickin' was crushing fools. But, you know, the point is, you know, whenever you step outside of the herd mentality, you're going to get some looks. And if you're not comfortable with that, then that's fine. But, you know, you just need to know that when you are doing this, when you show up at the trailhead and you've got flat pedals on and you've got a lightweight pair of shin pads on and you're surrounded by people who've got clipless pedals on and you know, they don't wear shin pads, they're going to give you some looks. But that's all right. You know, when they're walking through stuff and you're blasting through it laughing because you've got no fear in the world and you're having fun, then, you know, who cares? So, so that's kind of some things to keep in mind. I guess I'll go ahead and wrap that up on that note. But, you know, when you're making the switch to flats, that's important things to keep in mind. You know, you need a good pair of flats with a wide platform and good pin placement. You need some 5'10 shoes. You know, until somebody else comes out on the market with anything even remotely close, then, I mean, they've pretty much got the corner mark, or the market cornered on shoes that you need to be wearing when you're riding flats. And then lastly, you know, just know that you're going to be banging some shins, so invest in some cross-country shinies. So hope you guys have enjoyed this gear review. If you got any questions on any of this, you know where to find me at bikejames.com, and I'll be happy to answer your questions, and I will talk to you guys in the next podcast gear review. Hey everybody, this is James Wilson back with this month's training tip, and this month I wanted to talk about, kind of in particular, what to do when you're dealing with a nagging injury, and, you know, where to, you know, just some strategies and thoughts and stuff like that, as far as like how to address what the real underlying issue is. And, you know, if you've listened to my podcast or read my stuff for any amount of time, then you know that I'm a big believer in overuse injuries not being caused by the area where the pain shows up. And what I mean by that is, you know, an overuse injury is a kind of injury where, you know, it starts out as a little bit of a, you know, a niggle, and then it gets a little more pain, and then, you know, it's kind of one of these things that eventually just kind of like creeps up on you. It's not like when you fall off your bike and you bang your knee. It's like, okay, well, that's why my knee hurts. I slammed it into a rock last night. You know, it's the kind of thing where you get up the next morning and you're like, man, my knee is killing me from that ride yesterday. I don't know what I did. And like that's the kind of stuff, the insidious stuff that kind of creeps up that you really got to be careful of, because when stuff like that happens, the you either have one of two reactions that usually come. One is to pop some pain pills and ice it and just ignore it and just keep hammering on it. Or two is to try and figure out what is wrong with my knee. And this is how you end up going to like a traditional physical therapist or doctor or something who's going to look at your knee and tell you, oh, you've got like some, patella tracking issues or this is that wrong or that is wrong. And so, here's some things that you need to do for your knee. And, the reality is that's usually not where the problem is. And what got me thinking about this was, over the last few weeks, I've been dealing with a rubbing front brake, and I had no problems with it for months, and then all of a sudden I just noticed that my front brake was rubbing really badly. And so I tried straightening the caliper, readjusting the caliper to get it lined up right. I kept pushing the pads back in, and it just kept ending up rubbing. And so eventually I take it off and I dig into it, and I realized that, well, one of my calipers is sticking. It's just gotten dirty or out of line. It's not moving freely. And so I had to clean it off and throw a little tri-flow on it and get it moving freely. And boom, we're back to normal. Things are working great now. But, if I'd continued on down the path of thinking that, like, well, my brake is rubbing, my brake pad is rubbing on my rotor, that's where the problem is. I've got to, just keep pushing the brake pads back or keep readjusting the rotor instead of actually paying attention to where the real problem was, which is that the caliper was sticking, then, I never would have fixed the real problem, and I would have just ended up with a really frustrating time. And, it maybe ended up going out and doing something expensive, like buying a new brake or something like that. But, so that's kind of what got me thinking about this idea and thinking, like, it's kind of a good way to maybe explain to, fellow riders that where the problem is isn't necessarily where the real issue is or where things are manifesting itself. Like I said, in this case, in my case, my brake rotor was rubbing on my brake pads, but that's not where the problem was. That wasn't the issue. That's just where it was manifesting itself. And so same thing with overuse injuries and stuff like that that show up on your bike. And so, as a general rule of thumb, you want to, when you have pain show up in an area, like I said, especially when it's not from an acute injury, you want to look at the joint above and below that where the pain is and see if there's some dysfunction going on there. And a lot of times what you're going to find is the joints surrounding the painful joint are either immobile and or weak. And so what you're finding is that other joint where the pain is showing up is having to overcompensate. And so, a good example of this would be the knees. I think a lot of, riders, deal with knee injuries and stuff like that. And especially from, the repetitive pedaling motion. And so with the knee, you've got to look at the joints above and below it. And so, below it, you've got the ankle joint. And so if you don't have good mobility in your ankle joint, then you're going to end up coaxing extra mobility out of somewhere else. Well, guess where, it's going to come from? You're going to get your knee moving funny and tracking funny because it doesn't have you don't have the proper mobility at the ankle joint. And, if you look above the knee joint, you've got the hip joint. And the hip joint's another one, especially in cyclists, that is notoriously tight. We have very immobile hips. And then we've also got a lot of hip dysfunction, especially in the glutes. And so, from sitting all the time, seated pedaling does not require your glutes to activate nearly as much as standing pedaling does, which is another reason I'm such a huge advocate for standing pedaling, because it promotes a more balanced, hip development. But basically, when you end up with these imbalances at the hip, where you've got these really tight and strong quads, and you've got these weak, inactive glutes, then you're going to end up with things like, patella tracking issues and your knee caving in and all of these things that show up at the knee, but that's not where the problem is. And unfortunately, the traditional approach to stuff like this, where you just, attack the knee joint and, do some exercises and isolation stuff for the knee, yeah, it might make the pain go away in the short term, but it's not going to fix the real problem. And so, looking at things like ankle mobility and hip mobility and glute activation and strength is really going to help with, the knee joint. Another area that mountain bikers, run into problems with is their low back. And again, if you look at the joints above and below the low back, right below that is the hip joint. And so again, we've already kind of talked about the hip joint as far as how it being immobile, affects areas. If it can't move, then it's going to require the low back to move too much to make up for it. And this is something I've talked about in like my body position video and other articles and stuff where, you want to have a straight back. You want to minimize the rounding at the low back area, and that comes from being able to bend at the hips. And so if you can't bend at the hips, you bend at the low back. And so when you look at most riders, and they've kind of got their butt tucked up underneath them, and they've got their low back really rounded, and that's directly related to that immobility in the hips, and then not being able to hinge at the hips. So you're placing way too much stress on that low back. And also the glutes again come into it, because if you're not able to use your glutes to power movement, you're going to end up using that low back to help as well. And so, the low back tends to really take the brunt of the issues at the hips. If the hips aren't moving and they're weak, then the low back is going to try to make up for it. And also, if you look above the lower back, you get to the mid back, the thoracic spine, and that upper back as well is another area that is extremely immobile in most cyclists. And so you look at, again, it's almost cliche, that sloping forward shoulder posture that most cyclists have, and their shoulder blades are pushed really far apart from each other. Like, realistically, you should be able to pinch your shoulder blades together. Like, you should be able to pinch a pencil between your shoulder blades without having to stick your chest out. And if you can't do that, then you don't have good upper back mobility. And again, if you can't get that mobility out of your upper back, then you're going to have to coax it out of somewhere. And a lot of times it's going to come out of that low back as well. And so making sure you've got good upper back mobility will help with that low back as well. And that's kind of one of those forgotten areas. And I do a really good job of preaching hips, but that thoracic spine, that upper back area, is another one that, until you get that, that mobility up, and you can, free that upper back up, then you're that's going to affect your low back as well. And then another area that, affects a lot of cyclists is the neck, and people developing neck pain. And, this time there's only one joint, and it's, below the neck, and that's that thoracic spine. But it's the same issue if that thoracic spine, because a lot of times the dysfunction that we have at that upper back is a caved in chest. And so the chest is caved in, that upper back is pushed really far back. And so that means that your neck then has to strain even more to look up. And so when you're in a seated position on your bike, and again, I keep hammering on this, stand as much as you can, because sitting down and pedaling is just not a natural position and movement for your body to be in. So you can't be surprised when you come out of something like that with a ton of orthopedic issues. But when you're seated and pedaling, then you have to raise your head so high up. And then when you've got that upper back rounded, it makes you have to raise your head even more, which places even more strain on your neck. And so again, if you can get that, two things: one, stand more, but two, increase that upper back mobility so you can keep your chest puffed out and minimize that rounding at the upper back, then it's going to take a lot of stress and strain off of your neck from having to look up when you're in your seated position on the bike. And so those are just some things to keep in mind when you're, dealing with some of these common injury areas that cyclists have to deal with. And also just some food for thought. And I'm not a physical therapist. I just play one on the internet. Haha, just joking, kind of. But, most physical therapists, unfortunately, are trained in the traditional trauma model, which is when something hurts, you figure out why it hurts and fix it. And again, that works great when you fell and you bang your knee in the ground, or you broke your arm, or you need stitches, or you just had surgery, and so you're needing to restore some function to the affected joint in the surgery. Like, that approach works great. But the problem is that approach does not work as well when you're dealing with a movement issue. And so, you know, some things to keep in mind when you are looking for a medical professional, because remember, you know, we're not under full state-run healthcare yet, so we still do have a choice in who we get to and who we get to go to. But the you know, so you don't have to go to the first doctor or physical therapist that you get referred to. You know, you need to educate yourself, and you need to walk in there knowing, you know, at least having an idea of what kind of treatment plan is probably going to be best. And so, you know, if you've got this nagging knee issue and you go and you see a physical therapist and all they do is test your knee out and tell you, well, your knee is doing this and your knee is doing that, and here's some exercises and stretches for your knee, and they don't make any mention or talk at all about the joints above or below, or take kind of an overall look at how you move or anything like that, then I'm sorry, but they're not a good option for you. You need to find someone else who has a little bit better appreciation for movement and how these other joints affect the, you know, painful areas, especially when you're talking about an overuse type injury. So that's kind of, you know, the point, give you guys some ideas, and like I said, some education for yourself so you can walk in and be a little bit better educated and be able to make better decisions on your own care. Because, you know, remember, just because they graduated college with a degree doesn't mean that they're God and that they know everything. So yeah, just some stuff to keep in mind there. But yeah, you know, just remember, where problems are isn't always where the real issue is. Remember my brake caliper analogy. You know, if just because my brakes were rubbing didn't necessarily mean that that was where the issue was. I had to dig in a little deeper and fix some movement at the caliper level in order to get things to stop rubbing and start working well again. And same thing with your body. You dig in a little deeper, you fix the real problem, and you're going to take care of the issue for real. And the cool thing too is, a little bonus here is, bad movement causes pain, and bad movement also robs you of performance. So as you fix these alignment issues, you will see your performance improve. And that's kind of one of these things that, you know, again, it doesn't fit into our traditional view of things, because we always think that, well, you associate increases in performance with increases in training, you know, lifting more weight or doing more intervals or riding longer or riding harder. And, you know, that's how you get better. When, again, like I said, the reality is sometimes just stepping back, fixing the alignment issues, you know, basically taking your foot off of the brake, which is something I've mentioned before, will also help with your performance. And so just some stuff to keep in mind there. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this training tip. And if you guys have any nagging injuries or stuff like that, hopefully it's given you some food for thought and some ideas on how to address that this off season and go into next season nice and pain-free, which is really what it's all about. It sucks when your body starts telling you when you can ride and how long you can ride and how hard you can ride. So we want to avoid that scenario. So once again, it's been James Wilson with this month's training tip, and I'll talk to you guys next month. Hey everybody, here with this podcast supplement and nutrition tip, and today I wanted to talk about calories and how calories ultimately don't count. And a couple things got me thinking about this. One was my wife came back from a fat loss seminar put on by Rachel and Alan Cosgrove, two of the world's premier fat loss experts. And Kiele, my wife, told me that, you know, for the first almost 3 hours of the seminar was Alan Cosgrove standing up there going over slide after slide after slide of scientific studies that pretty much disproved the whole idea of calories in and calories out. You had, you know, people on severely, severely restricted, calorie-restricted diets. I mean, we're talking like less than 1,000 calories a day who were putting on lean muscle mass, which should be impossible according to the you know, calories in, calories out theory. You know, you had people who increased their calories by, you know, 500 to 1,000 and, you know, well over their daily recommended you know, calorie count and lost fat. And so, you know, again, there's just study after study that was showing that a lot of what we hold to be true in the nutritional sciences just really isn't. That there's so much more to the situation than just calories in and calories out. And so ultimately what it boils down to is, you know, what is it? Where are the calories coming from? And again, this is one of the things that I think a lot of people forget about and leads to a lot of this confusion, is that in many ways science, and you know, I like science, it has its place. I just, science in many ways is a religion, and people get caught up in that, and you know, you don't question the religion of science on a lot of levels, but the reality is science is a reductionist mentality. You know, science cannot study something unless they can reduce it to a very basic controllable variable. And so when it comes to nutrition, the controllable variable that science has reduced nutrition down to is calories. And so realistically, according to science, a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. I mean, you know, you'll literally have, you know, scientists who will tell you that, you know, well, why eat an orange? Why not just, you know, eat a packet of sugar and have a vitamin C pill? Like honest, like this is their mentality, that you can reduce an orange down to a packet of sugar and a vitamin C tablet. So, you know, this is where this, you know, just know where your information is coming from and the mentality of the people behind it, you know. But a calorie is not just a calorie. I mean, there's no way that you're going to tell me that, you know, if you eat 2,000 calories worth of, you know, Fruit Loops and Snickers and, you know, fast food, that you're going to end up with a better body composition level and better energy levels than if you ate 3,000 calories worth of lean meats and fruits and vegetables and healthy fats. You know, just logically, you know that is not the case. You know that you're not going to end up with better body composition, better energy levels, and stuff like that, eating fewer calories from junk food than you would from eating more calories from good food. And so this whole, you know, again, it creates a lot of confusion. And I know, like, the fat loss side's a little outside of you know, the mountain biking thing. But, you know, I do know there are a lot of people out there mountain biking that are looking to drop a few pounds, and you know, several people that get into mountain biking to help them get into shape. And so the confusion comes when they're looking at this and they're thinking, well, shoots, I need to be consuming X amount of calories, or if I want to lose weight, then all I need to do is eat less, right? So this is how you end up with people like starving themselves and not eating enough, is because of this message that has just been drilled into our heads that it's all about the calories, that if you're getting fat, it's because you're eating too many calories. And if you want to lose fat, you need to eat fewer calories. And that is just such a very small part of the overall picture. And like I said, you know, even scientific studies out there show that is just not true, that there's way more to the equation than simply calories in and calories out. And so, you know, I'm a really big believer in John Berardi's precision nutrition approach to nutrition. And it's basically to follow habits. You know, he has a deal where, you know, he has his seven basic habits that you need to be following, and he won't even talk calories or grams of this or grams of that with you until you have established this baseline of good eating habits. And what he's found, and I can concur, I've found with my own clients as well, is 9 times out of 10, when you get someone to just start eating this way and following good dietary habits, that everything else just falls into place, that you don't have to count calories. You don't have to count, you know, grams of protein and grams of carbs and stuff like that. So, you know, this also makes it a lot easier for us to put this stuff into practice. Again, I know from experience that the confused mind says no. And a lot of times when people know that they need to be doing something, but they're not doing it, it's not because they don't want to do it. It's because they just don't have clarity on how to get there. And so without clarity, they end up doing nothing. And so this is why things like the, you know, the food pyramid has done nothing to help with our health. I mean, just kind of on a side note, I mean, you know, not to like get on too bad of a side tangent rant, but, you know, remember where we're getting this info from too. I mean, you know, the American Medical Association and Surgeon Generals and all these people, I mean, you know, these are the same people that have been watching over the explosion of the obesity epidemic and you know, just Americans getting fatter and more out of shape and fatter and more out of shape and fatter and more out of shape every year. And so, you know, but yet we keep going back to these people for advice on what to do. I mean, you know, their track record is so piss poor. It's amazing to me that they get any, you know, anybody listens to them anymore. But, you know, so just remember kind of where this info is coming from. I mean, these are the people that gave us the food pyramid. If anyone can understand what the food pyramid means and how that impacts your daily food decisions, you know, please let me know, because I'm still trying to figure it out myself. But, you know, these are the same people who are telling you that you need to be eating 2,000 calories a day, without giving you any real regard as far as like where these calories need to be coming from, what good, you know, food habits are and things like that. And so, so, you know, ultimately the calories in, calories out thing doesn't count. You know, don't be putting the cart before the horse. Don't worry about how many grams of protein or carbs before you're making sure that you're following these habits. And, you know, some of these habits that you want to be following, you know, this is review if you've been following my stuff or read some of my articles or been to precisionnutrition.com and seen John Berardi's stuff. But, you know, eating every 3 hours, eating lean protein with every meal, eating fruits and or vegetables with every meal, staying away from the calorie-containing beverages, staying away from the refined carbs, making sure that you're getting plenty of good fat so that you're, you know, supplementing with, you know, fish oils and stuff like that. I mean, if nothing else, I mean, if you just cut out the refined carbs and ate more fruits and vegetables, you'd be amazed at what that would do for your body composition levels and your energy levels. And, you know, you don't have to count a single calorie in the process. So, so the point is don't worry about calories. Don't count calories. Don't worry about those things until you've got these basic, you know, food habits established. And remember that, you know, especially if you're trying to lose weight, that it's not about eating less. It's about eating more of the right stuff. And so, again, you know, there have been case studies and scientific studies that have shown that by actually increasing people's calories, you can help them burn fat faster. So, you know, a lot of this stuff just does not make any sense when you look at like real world results. And calories is one of those things. Just remember, it's a reductionist mentality. You cannot boil nutrition down to a calorie and expect for that mindset and mentality and advice that comes from that mentality to really hold up and provide good long-lasting results and stuff like that. So anyways, hope you guys have enjoyed this nutrition tip, and I will talk to you guys in the next one. All right, guys, this is James Wilson back wrapping up this podcast. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. Hope you guys riding season. I know, you know, it's an international thing that I'm doing here, so I know not everybody is wrapping up their riding season, but you know, here in the US in the northern hemisphere we are. So hopefully everybody's having a good season so far and things are wrapping up nicely. I actually got to go with a bunch of buddies to Moab last weekend and ride the whole enchilada, famous trail there. Starts up at about 11,400 feet up in the La Salle Mountains, and you can ride it all the way down. It consists of Borough Pass, UPS, LPS, and then the famous Porcupine Rim Trail, which is a hell of a way to finish off a 3+ hour ride. But you know, great ride, epic ride. And you know, if you guys get a chance to do that, definitely recommend it. Although I'll give you a little warning, it is not a 4 hour downhill. It is mostly downhill, but there is quite a bit of pedaling on that sucker. So make sure that you bring a trail bike. You know, it's definitely not something that you'd want to just bring your big old downhill bike on, although it'd be pretty fun in some sections, but you're going to be suffering in others. So it's definitely a good overall trail ride. And then, just wrapping up the season here locally. If anybody's in the area, just throwing this out there, next month, October 9th and 10th, October 9th and 10th we're putting on a little festival up at the ranch, the Hucktoberfest. It's going to be a fundraising thing for a local bike park that we're putting in at the Lunch Loop Trails around here, which is really cool. I mean, I love living in this area. It's a very progressive, mountain bike friendly area, and also not too many people around here too, which is great. It blows me away. I'll be out on just world class trails and not see another soul for hours, man. It's awesome. But anyway, so we're going to be doing some fun stuff up there. I'm actually going to be putting on a skills clinic. We're going to be having a dual slalom race and a slope style comp, you know, pretty low key thing compared to like the ranch style comp that we put on at the beginning of the year up there. But yeah, all the proceeds are going to go to the bike park. So, you know, if anybody's in the area and wants to check that out, you know, definitely do that. And then I guess next weekend is the return of the Red Bull Rampage. So I'm going to try to wander off to that and never got a chance to see that stuff in person. I have been to Virgin before and seen the, you know, some of the original venues, which are just freaking unreal. I mean, I don't know how you stand on the top of some of those cliffs and think like, yeah, I'm going to jump off this thing and then take my hands off the handlebars in the air or something like that. It just, you know, the mindset that goes into that just still blows me away, you know. But so that should be fun. And then, just kind of wrapping up the season, getting going in the off season. I'm actually working really hard on the update to my Ultimate MTB Workout Program. Version 3.0 is going to be coming out soon. I didn't get an update done last year, and so definitely getting this one done this year. And it's going to be a totally revamped thing, man. New cardio training, new strength training. You know, it's going to reflect the last 2+ years of experience that I've had in working with riders and developing better programs and stuff like that. So, you know, no radical changes. I guess, like, you know, there's a saying that principles are many and excuse me, that methods are many and principles are few. So realistically, all it is just, you know, better methods for applying the same principles. Cause I can definitely tell you the principles of training that I use haven't really changed that much over the last couple of years, like if at all, but just definitely found some better methods and things like that. So, working hard on that and hope to be coming out with that here in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, any of you guys that have my Ultimate MTB Workout Program, you guys will get a chance to get your hands on that for a big discount. When I do come out with it, the price of the Ultimate MTB Workout Program is going to go up because it is going to contain better info and deliver better results. So some of the things I got on tap here. So that's about it. I guess I'm going to get going. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast. You can find me on the web at bikejames.com. Once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. You got any questions or comments about anything you've heard on this podcast, pop on over to my blog at bikejames.com and leave me a question in the comments section, and I'll be happy to get back to you. And I will talk to you guys in my next podcast.